We are blessed today to have you around us. I think you heard that we were not satisfied with you not coming. But we said we want the DG to come to this meeting because since it came the time we were congratulating her for her appointment. So today we are happy to see you and to say it's not going to be only today, DG. It's going to be an ongoing attendance. And the members, like I said, next time, I've got the minister's apology because definitely she can't be able to come and attend because of cabinet. So next time, when we come back, we will try and schedule our meetings in the afternoon, not every Wednesday, but where we can, so that the minister can be able to attend. We are the select committee, for those who don't know us. We are the select committee on labor and public enterprises and communications. I'm Priscilla Nemba, the chairperson of this committee, representing Mpumalanga in the National Council of Provinces. Members will introduce themselves, then the department.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Herman Groenewald, representing the Northwest Province and member of this committee.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Vizela Jacobs, representing the president.
Son Manani, Mogosen Zulu, Mele Sunda Sauna Senata.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Vola Mlenza. I'm representing the province of the Eastern Cape.
Good morning. My name is Renelle Barreto. I'm the researcher for the committee. Good morning. I am Pumelele Sibis. I am the committee secretary.
Thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson. First, let me thank you for your warm welcome and thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. And I'm Rose Fekes, the DG Department of Communications.
Good morning, Honorable Members. I'm Farhad Othman, Chief Director of Strategic Planning and Monitoring from Department of Communications.
Good morning, Chair, Honorable Members. I'm Zemvila Razi, the Deputy Director General for Administration, Department of Communications.
Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, my name is Tanda Piri. I am the Deputy Director General for the ICT Policy and Strategy Plans.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Begumuzi Kiftu Selezi. I'm the DDG International Affairs Trade. Thank you.
Chair, Honourable Members, good morning. My name is Chabu Khatebe, Acting DDG, ICT Infrastructure.
Good morning. My name is Kiri Sekwili, Chief Director, Human Resources, Department of Communications.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Paul Sobella, Chief Director, Communications.
Caroline Kutsit, Monitor from the PMG.
Morning, Chairperson and Honourable Members. My name is Manche Gele, Waha Munama, in the Ministry of Communications.
Good morning.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. My name is Maurice Funnycat from the eSkills Institute, a branch within the Department of Communication.
Good morning, Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Abraham Soltad from UC Finance.
Good morning, Chair President, Honorable Members. My name is Michael Tingela, Chief Director, Internal Audit and Risk Management.
Good morning, Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Alfred Amoti, Chief Director, Internal Audit and Risk Management.
Now we know each other. Our agenda stands as follows. It's presentation by the Department of Communication on their annual report. Members, we've got other items on the agenda, but I think we won't be able to tackle them because we've got an agent caucus at 12:30. So we were supposed to consider minutes and the report on the employment, Sheltered Employment Center. But we'll see where we go, how far we go. I will request DG that when you do presentation, be cautious of time. Thanks. Over to you.
Honorable Chairperson, maybe just a clarification. How much time do we have just for the presentation before we deal with the questions? It will give me a sense of how to manage time.
I will start to present. We have at least tried to apply to our minds.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you, Honorable Members. Thank you for the invitation. And this presentation seems to be presented by myself, but we are a team, so they will be able to assist me when we deal with the questions. We are now on slide number 3. Maybe just to reflect on what the department is about in terms of the vision, mission, and mandate. I'll just focus mainly on the vision. In essence, what we are striving to be, or what we are striving for South Africa to be, is South Africa to be a global leader, not only in the development, but also in the use of ICTs for socio-economic development. Now, this vision is also articulated in terms of the vision, the mission and mandate, and therefore filtered into what we have normally referred to as our strategic plan. And what we are presenting today is progress with regard to our achievement of the strategic plan, which therefore is translated into the annual report. But what we thought we would do, Honorable Chairperson, is maybe just to give you a sense of the general overview of how we, the whole performance of the department, which also definitely which deals with the annual report. And the key thing that we would want to engage on is that due to focused planning and streamlining of our priorities, in the 2011 and 2012 financial year, the department committed to achieving 99 targets. In the previous year, the number of targets that we had committed were higher than 11, 12. And so what we've been trying to do as a department is just to streamline and focus, but also to ensure that we don't have too many activities, and so that it can assist us in terms of our own achievement. When compared to the year end, that is the 2010-2011, the performance of the department increased from 51% to 70%. So therefore, 70% is about the 2011 and 2012. This substantial improvement can be attributed to a number of issues. The first critical one, which we would want to applaud the minister, is with regard to critical decisions that had to be taken to cabinet. And we would be able to engage on what were those critical decisions that may have to deal with some of the critical programs or projects that we are busy with. The second issue is our own interaction with provinces and local government in terms of the IGR Act. And the next one is the financial performance, both focusing on the project delivery, but the most important thing is the accountability of
the budget that has surpassed the previous year. The next issue is alignment of the strategic objectives of the department and the entities. This was one of the issues that was also raised at the Portfolio Committee on Communications with regard to the alignment of the department's strategic objectives and that of the entities. And we went through a process where we aligned what the department is doing and also what the entity is doing. But also not to forget that everything that we are doing is about ensuring that we do achieve our targets on the ministerial delivery and agreement. The next issue that also affected us was with regard to the appointment of key positions in the department. But the last issue on this side is with regard to the effective functioning of the governance and structures. Now, having reflected on the general overview, we also want the committee to note that there were some challenges that we also faced during the 2011 and 2012. And some of the challenges that we would want to engage the committee on have to deal with the community radio provision, where we had challenges with the current service provider. And the next issue that we are also grappling with, but we are working on it, is with regard to attracting critical skills in critical projects, for example, DTT and broadband as an example of the projects that we are busy within the department. But also, one of the
processes... Yes, you will be busy when you... When it comes to
my apologies, Chairperson. DTT is the digital terrestrial television. We did, I think, provide an acronym, but I'll say when we deal with acronym, I'll raise it. The next issue also, which was a bit of a challenge for us, is with regard to the turnaround of the Presidential National Commission, that is the PNC, into its mandate, but also critically integrating the PNC into the department as a unit or structure or branch of the department. The second issue that also assisted us in terms of the performance of the department is the extensive engagement or collaboration with the industry, which was established in the form of the ICT Industry Working Group and made up of captains of industry and was first supported by the six work streams. Now, let me just reflect on the flagships of the department. The following are the flagships of the department. The reason why we refer to them as the flagships, these are the critical programs that we believe that as a department, they deserve a dedicated focus in terms of our own delivery and performance of the department. The first one being broadband, the second one being broadcasting digital migration, which we normally refer to as DTT or digital terrestrial television. Third being job creation, number four is schools, number five being rural connectivity, and the last one being poultry. Maybe just to reflect on the progress with regard to the achievement of the flagship program, starting with broadband as the first flagship program. The one critical issue that we also had to deal with was the development of a broadband strategy and also the development of broadband implementation plan. Over and above that, we also appointed a service provider that assisted us with the analysis of the broadband in terms of penetration, cost, and also the mapping. But also, what we also did as a department was the provincial and municipal broadband guidelines were finalized, and these were distributed by what we refer to as the Broadband Intergovernmental Implementation Committee. This is a committee attended by national departments that have got a role to play with regard to broadband and also provinces. The last issue that we also want to raise on this slide is that we continue to facilitate and monitor the rollout of DTT, which is a digital terrestrial television infrastructure, and by year-end we achieved a 60% population coverage. The last issue again on this slide is the local transmitter rollout was also facilitated and monitored with 19 local stations established. Now, maybe just to reflect again on the broadband. The one critical program that we also undertook with regard to
broadband is the 2010 FIFA World Cup Legacy Project, which in Maine is about connecting 1,650 schools. And these schools are distributed nationally in 11 districts. And selection of the schools is mainly done by the Department of Basic Education. And today, Telkom has installed the One Area Network, which is what we refer to as the WAN connection, in 600 schools, and the project is currently under progress. And the broadband services delivered in these schools are access to email, internet, as well as the hosting of educational content. Now, the next flagship program that we would want to reflect on is the broadcasting digital migration. And members will recall that I referred to some of the critical decisions that had to be taken by Cabinet. This is one of the issues that the Minister supported us, that is, Cabinet approved the scheme of ownership and support in March 2011, and the rollout of the scheme will only start once prospective manufacturers have been appointed. And with regard to the developing a means for identifying poor TV household and infrastructure subsidies, the department engaged its own one of its entities, that is the Universal Service Access Agency for South Africa, to monitor the progress against the scheme of ownership and implementation, and also finalize the qualifying criteria. The cabinet also approved the STD, the set-top box manufacturing sector development strategy, and this was also approved in March 2012. And the implementation of this strategy has also commenced. And the last issue that I would want to reflect on this slide is that the department, in collaboration with ISASA, has also finalized the business rules for the STD distribution process in terms of for the qualifying household. Now, maybe just elaborate further on the broadcasting design migration. Was that a request for the proposal for the STB manufacturing was published at the end of July 2012, and we need to receive a number of responses. We are currently in the process of evaluating this tender. And over and above that, what we also achieved was the first phase of the DTT launch, which is the digital terrestrial television, was launched successfully in the Northern Cape from the 2nd to the 3rd of October. Now, the one issue that we also want to reflect is that due to the ETV cost challenges, the following implication should be noted, that suspension of all processes relating to the STB tender, including evaluation proposals from STB manufacturing companies, but also to note that this court challenge can have got a potential to impact on the project, but we are quite confident that the matter will be successfully resolved and will be able to proceed with the project. Now, it is envisaged that the full commercial launch will happen in the first quarter of 2013. Now, the next flagship program, which is the eSkills. The department commenced with numerous eSkills pilot training programs, resulting in the training of 2,500 students. What we also did is the five provincial hubs are conducting provincial audits on all eSkills across business, government, and education. And we also managed to finalize the B-level curriculum, which is already being offered. What we also did was that we initiated engagement with several universities on the establishment of the eSkills coordinations and coordinations and production hubs.
I don't want when we come to questions then that we raise them. When we talk of us, we are provincial representatives. And when we talk of provincial hubs, provincial audits across, you know, we want to know specific, like, I don't want to take it for granted that this presentation that you are presenting here, you presented it to the portfolio committee. Because as you are talking to us, you are talking to provinces. So we must know which provinces from the start. We don't even have to come to questions and ask you which provinces are those who say district. You must just go straight to the information. We want this information.
Okay.
Otherwise, if this was the portfolio committee's presentation, You must just clarify and tell us if it was presented this side, and then we say we call it a day.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. We tried to provide the slide. The next slide, I think the way we provided the information was to integrate the provincial and information into the previous presentation. The next slide gives us a sense of the impact across provinces with regard to the e-school flagship. And Honorable Members, if we look at that slide, it shows in terms of thought leaders, e-practitioners, e-users communities across provinces, this is more or less the numbers that were achieved with regard to the e-skills training across the province. What we also provided was the slide number 13 deals with the numbers. Slide number 14 is it's a tutorial view of the number of, in terms of the training across the provinces, in the following categories, that is the thought leaders, the e-practitioners, the e-users, and the communities. If I can just move to the next slide, which is slide number 15, which then focuses on the flagship program, that is the rural connectivity. This is the flagship number 4 program. With regard to this flagship, the department developed an ICT rural development strategy, which was presented at the ISET multi-stakeholder forum, which is the Information Society and Development multi-stakeholder forum, and also outcome 7 of the implementation. Outcome 7 is the outcome that is managed by the economic and cluster. The strategy was further presented to the DG's implementation cluster committee and was adopted. And with regard to the strategy, it's supported by an implementation plan, and the implementation has commenced in identified rural sites, which focuses on the following areas. The first one is the provision of basic ICT services as a base for service delivery. The second one being building ICT infrastructure to bring accessibility, affordability on services that are needed being the third one. And then the schools, lab, and connectivity in the fourth focus area. E-health being the next focus area. And then radio and television services being the next focus area. E-agriculture, and the last one being cultural and heritage content. With regard to the next flagship program, that is the post bank. Members will know that the flagship program is post bank, but what we've also done was to also report on the SACOP, because we went through a process of also amending or dealing with the SACOP, and the two are interrelated because of consequential amendment. When you amend one, and then you have consequential amendment on the second act. The SACOP bill was developed and underwent a legislative process, and this bill was signed into law by the President in December 2011. The Post-Bank Act also came into operation in July 2011, and its implementation is being monitored. Following extensive research, the Department also developed the borrowing, lending, and investment policies, and this went through a consultation with National Treasury, Post-Bank, and also the Post Office. The final policies have been submitted to the Minister of Finance for concurrence as requested. Now, the next flagship program, which is job creation. The department promotes and monitors job creation through various projects. Most critical for job creation for us is the broadcast digital migration. Statistics pertain to the number of potential jobs to be finalized during the implementation of STB manufacturing strategy, which was approved under in the period under review. Now, over and above focusing on the flagship program, Honorable Members, what we then want to do is just to give you a sense of the achievement per program. And we will start with the ICT policy and development program. And this program, in essence, is about the development of ICT policies and legislation that supports the development of the ICT sector that creates favorable conditions for the accelerated and shared growth of the economy. The key achievement of this program, they start on slide number 19. The first one being the integrated ICT policy framework for a converted ICT environment. And this document was also approved. And secondly, being that through a legislative process, The necessary changes were effected to the SACCO bill, and after which the SACCO bill was signed into law by the President in December 2011. The next issue that we also want honorable members to note is that during the reporting period, the department also developed the performance management system, which is the last bullet on the slide, which is the PMS, for the ICASA councillors. And the ICASA PMS was tabled in Parliament and subsequently approved. And what we are doing in this financial year is the implementation of the performance management system of all the ICASA councillors. Now on the next slide, just a brief summary of the key achievement of the ICT policy and development branch is that Cabinet approved the scheme of ownership support in March 2011, and also noting that Cabinet also approved the set-top box manufacturing sector development strategy also in March 2012, and its implementation has also commenced. And furthermore, is that the Broadcasting Digital Migration Public Awareness Campaign was launched in March 2011. The next issue that is also very critical for this program is with regard to the cost to communicate. A process entered into a memorandum of understanding was initiated with the regulator, that is ICASA, to implement a program of action on the cost of telephony in South Africa. Over and above this process with the regulator, the research on international practice on business processing outsourcing was conducted, and a development pricing strategy was developed with the Department of Trade and Industry. Furthermore, an ICT data warehouse portal has been developed and populated with the relevant ICT data. The next key achievement that also has to do with this program is with regard to the e-skills. The department introduced a new short courses relevant to the e-skills needs, as well as established a national research for the e-skills network across five local universities. And with regard to the universities that we worked with, Eden Gauteng, which is the University of Pretoria, Northern Cape, which is Vaal University of Technology, Western Cape, the University of Western Cape, KZN, Durban University of Technology, Eastern Cape, which is the Walter Sisulu University. There are also discussions with University of Limpopo, Free State University, Northwest, and also Johannesburg, and there are also discussions in terms of collaboration also with Mpumalanga, even though there's no university yet. It's about how do we collaborate to ensure that we do not leave the province behind. Yeah. Yes, and it's through the Johannesburg University. Now, the next issue, which also we would want honorable members to note, is that this short courses impacted on the increase in the number of short courses relevant to the e-skills capacity development needs. And an increase in the intake of the relevant e-skills aligned to and accepted to the industry, government and educational needs, and also targeting the rural and peri-urban communities. And furthermore, it increased the awareness of the e-skills evidence-based research. Over and above that, what we also want honorable members to note is that we also conducted or hosted an ICT Career Expo 2011, which was held from the 3rd to the 5th of October 2011, in line with expansion model. And the parallel activities were also held in PE, Free State, Devon, and also Cape Town. A former national e-skills multi-stakeholder collaboration network was established with a formal commitment from the key stakeholders across government, business, and education. Now, moving on to the next slide, with regard to the key achievements under this program, that is the ICT Policy Development Program, is that in implementing an IGR engagement framework, the department engaged all provinces over the reporting period and established seven factors where the department can participate to promote the ICT agenda. And the implementation of the IGR engagement framework was monitored through the operationalization of the various committees proposed by the framework and successful and constructive functioning of these structures. And honorable members, in the interest of time, I would move on to the next program, which is the ICT Infrastructure Development Program on slide number 24. In essence, what this program is about is to promote the investment in robust and reliable, secured and affordable ICT infrastructure that supports and enables the provision of multiplicity of application and services. With regard to this program, key achievements are as follows. The first one being the program study conducted on cost, penetration and coverage to inform interventions going forward on broadband, but also the legal provisions in support of broadband infrastructure development were developed. Noting that some of the challenges that we are also experiencing with regard to broadband in terms of across the three tiers of government has to deal with the challenges that we have with the existing legal framework. The next issue, Honorable Members, that you also want to report on is that we conducted a radio frequency spectrum audit in order to inform interventions with regard to the efficient utilization of the radio frequency spectrum. And over and above that, the department developed a broadband strategy document together with the broadband implementation plan. The next area to report on is on slide number 25, which deals with the connectivity of the health centers and schools. Connectivity plan for the schools was developed to coordinate the deployment of broadband connectivity for schools. We also want honorable to know, members to note that this connectivity plan was developed in collaboration with the Department of Basic Education. And with regard to health, a draft connectivity plan for health centers was also developed to coordinate and guide the deployment of broadband connectivity for health facilities. Now, on the digital terrestrial television infrastructure rollout, we want honorable members to know that we achieved a 60% population coverage on DTT rollout, which in essence is about facilitating the digital migration, but also freeing up the radio frequency spectrum and that can be used for other services. The next issue also that we would want to report on is that 19 low power transmitters were established, and these positively impacted on households that do not have access to some of these broadcasting services. The next key achievement that we would also want to report on is that Cabinet approved the National Health Security Policy Framework, and this was achieved. Well, this was approved in March 2012, and since then, is that we started with the establishment of a cyber security hub to contribute to the combating cybercrime and also making the cyberspace secure. Over and above that, what we also achieved is that we participated in what we normally refer to as WRC, which is the World Radio Conference 2012, which was held in Geneva. And this conference is about influencing the Global Radio Conference and what we achieved as a country through SADC and also the African Common Proposal was the extension of what we normally refer to as the digital dividend. This is about radio frequency spectrum that are identified and to be used for other services, for example, for broadband. Now, the next slide, which in essence gives us a sense of the ICT infrastructure development with regard to the TV and radio services per province. This is information that we wanted honorable members just to note in terms of both for the TV and radio service, how these services are provided provisionally. And this in essence deals with the next two to three slides, honorable members. And then just to move on to the next slide, which is slide number 31, which is the key achievement for the Presidential National Commission. And with regard to this program, I briefly spoke to the ICT Rural Development Strategy, which was developed and adopted, and also with an implementation plan that was also developed. And we have commenced with the implementation of the ICT Rural Development and Strategy. And on the e-application for health, consultations with the National and Provincial Departments for Health resulted in the buy-in with provinces and the National Department of Health on those projects. And this led to the Department of Health providing information required for the audit of the e-applications, but specifically on health. over and above that, an audit on the RSE application in health was conducted in provincial departments for health, and an audit report was also prepared and analyzed. A proof of concept, that is the primary healthcare information system solution, was developed for e-applications, and it was also tested on the open source application. The next key achievement with regard to this program, that is the PNC, is with regard to the e-literacy training for the youth. The e-literacy program for the young people was implemented. 1,050 young people participated in the e-literacy training program during the reporting period. And over and above that, the country information readiness report was prepared and published in August 2011. And this report, in essence, is about reporting the primary studies in sectors where secondary data was also not available. Maybe just to move on to the next slide, which is the last reporting with regard to this program, which is the PNC, is that the ASET, the Information Society and Development Research Framework, was adopted. And this research framework was prepared and adopted during the reporting period. And with regard to the foresight and planning, the 5 to 10 year foresight planning, the analysis was conducted using the top 10 ICT countries in the world, and this analysis was completed, and the analysis was in essence comparing South Africa to these countries. The next program, Honorable Benmar, that we want to report on is on the ICT International Affairs and Trade. And this branch, in essence, is about ensuring alignment between South Africa's international activity and agreements in the field of ICTs and South Africa's foreign policies. The following are the key achievements with regard to the international branch. And the first one is about the strengthening of the private ICT structures. The department developed a position paper on the SADC program of action with regard to the interconnection and the regulatory framework. The one critical activity that we are proud of is that the department also actively participated in the SADC ICT ministerial meeting in Botswana, Gaborone, and the meeting adopted a number of key positions, but the one that we want to report on is with regard to the establishment of a program management office. And this program management office is about monitoring the implementation of or the migration of the analog to from analog to digital terrestrial and television. The next issue is that the department hosted the first Southern African Internet Governance Forum. This governance forum, in essence, it deals with the how do you manage the internet resources, like, for example, things like your domain name, as per the mandate of the SADC ICT ministerial decision, in preparation for the global IGF, which was hosted in September 2011. What we also did as the department in supporting SADC was that we developed the draft terms of reference for the establishment of the Broadcasting Data Migration Desk for the SADC Secretariat. And over and above that, with regard to the regional connection, South Africa hosted the SADC Regional Infrastructure Development Master Plan Workshop, which was in essence to update the master plan that would be adopted for all SADC countries. The next key achievement for this program is that the department developed a position paper for the African Union and ministers on communications and information technology with a primary focus on the implementation of the Oliver Tambo Declaration. These outcomes, in essence, were include the development of a cyber legislation for Africa and the establishment of the .Africa domain and the harmonization of the ICT policy across Africa. The next key activity is that we also participated in the African Telecommunication Union, which is the ATU Digital Migration and Policy Summit in Nairobi in Kenya, and then where South Africa showcased progress in the digital migration as well as to position the country favorably as a electronic manufacturing hub. The next issue that we'd want to report on is with regard to the strengthening the bilateral relations with priority countries. And what we achieved is that the department engaged countries like Egypt, Algeria, to strengthen relations and further so that the formation and implementation of the strategic partners. The next key achievement on the next slide, which is slide number 37, which is strengthening the South-South and the North-South bilateral, is that we've made substantial progress with regard to the South Africa and Cuba agreement on cooperation, which will pave the way for the implementation of the training program. Over and above that is that the South African training program needs assessment was conducted with a view to centralize ICT training and capacity building at NEMISA. And this training program was implemented and officials attended the training on e-skills, broadband and GTT in the partner countries. The last key issue that we want to report on this slide is with regard to trade and investment is that the department developed an ICT trade and investment strategy which was consulted with the Department of Trade and Industry and to ensure alignment with the ICT trade related projects that the Department of Trade and Industry is involved in. The last key achievement with regard to this program is that the department participated in the UPU, which is the postal union, which was hosted in and thereafter hosted the African Support Committee meeting in preparation for the postal union progress. But over and above that, what we also hosted in December 2011 in Cape Town was the ITU Cardioscope Conference, and this event was intended to stimulate interest amongst academia in the work of the ITU, and this event was hosted in collaboration with the University of Cape Town. What we also did and we reported on this one is that the department participated successfully in the World Radio Conference. And this participation was led by the minister, and it was, I think it was in February 2012. The next key issue that we want to report on is on the ICT Enterprise Development Program. And this program, in essence, is responsible to oversee and manage government shareholding interest in the public entities, but also to facilitate the growth and the development of the small, medium, and micro enterprises, that is the SMEs. And the key achievements with regard to this program are on slide number 40. And with regard to this program, the critical one for us is the SOE and oversight. And as part of strengthening the oversight within the state-owned entities, we have prioritized the filling of critical vacancies in our entities, for example, the boards and the CEOs, CFOs and the COOs. And among other activities that were undertaken as part of the ongoing oversight and monitoring, which consisted of three critical areas, the first one being the training process, second being monitoring and compliance, the third being corporate governance and the financing of the entities. Maybe just to move forward in the interest of time, on slide number, I think slide number 40 and slide number 41, it mainly articulates what are the key activities that we achieved with regard to the planning process, monitoring and compliance. On slide number 41, it deals with corporate governance and also the financing of the entities. And slide number 40 deals with SMME development, but maybe just to refer on this slide is that the department adopted and deliberate program which would assist us, or its main purpose is ensuring that SMEs in all provinces and cooperatives are afforded an opportunity to grow and develop in the ICT sector. Some of the key projects included were the development of plans to ensure that SMEs are able to benefit from the sector box manufacturing value chain. The next one is with regard to the training of the young people to run and operate the cooperatives. The last program that we want to report on, honorable members, is the governance and administration, which we normally refer to as the GNA. And this program, in essence, is about the strategic support of to the ministry and overall to the department. And on slide number 44, just reflect on the key achievement of this program is that we undertook an extensive organizational structure review, which was approved by the minister, but also submitted to the Minister of Public Service and Administration for concurrence. Over and above that, there were a number of policies that were also reviewed. The first one being the performance management, the education training and training and development, the bursary policies, career management, recruitment and selection, and the last one being the specialists. Over and above that, the one thing that maybe would want to reflect on this side is that the department, we also rolled out an internship program, and this internship program was successfully rolled out with regard to the interns that were recruited in the department. The next issue, maybe just to reflect on, is that with regard to the 50% gender representation at some SMS level for the cabinet directive, the department achieved a 40% female representation at SMS level. The next key achievement with regard to this program, which is on slide number 45, is that the department complied with the requirements of the PSMA with regard to the evaluation of the organizational performance, and this includes the submission of the quarterly report against the strategic plan to the executive authority. The department also established and what we normally refer to as the organizational performance board, and this performance board, in essence, its role is to consider the quarterly performance as consolidated by individual programs, and once the organizational performance board has considered this quarterly report, these quarterly reports are consolidated, and then they form what we normally refer to as the quarterly performance report of the department. Over and above that, we also complied with the requirement of the National Treasury with regard to the framework for the development of the strategic plan and the annual performance plans. Although there were delays with the rollout of the electronic organizational performance management system, which we normally refer to as the EOPMS, the department made substantial progress, and this system is now fully rolled out in this financial year, that is the 2012 and 2013. The next key achievement, before I hand over to DVG Vilarasi, is on slide number 46 with regard to the financial management. In an effort to implement and ensure compliance with sound financial management practices and other related services within the prescribed legislation, the department has reviewed relevant financial delegation and procedures to ensure that all transactions were undertaken in line with the provisions of the PSMA. The following policies were reviewed, that is the cell phone policy, entertainment and catering, the debt management, the banking and the cash policy. The asset management strategy and the acquisition plan were also approved and incorporated into the strategic plan of the department. And the 2010 and 2011 annual financial statements were compiled and submitted to the National Treasury and the Auditor General. Honorable Chairperson and honorable members, I would like to hand over to DG Vilegasi just to take us through the financial performance on slide number 48.
Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, Thank you, Director General. Honourable Chair, the first two slides, that is slide number 48 and slide number 49, they deal with the revenue and expenditure within the department.
If you look at the revenue component, we have received 2 billion from National Treasury. That was an adjusted appropriation. The 2.3 billion constitutes dividends that we get from Telkom as well as Vodacom due to the shareholding that the government has. The 8.4 million then constitutes the receipts from ICASA for license fees. And of course, a foreign aid at 240,000 from Finland government. That then gives us 4.3 billion of the revenue. In terms of the expenditure, we have expenditure of 379, which is made up of mainly the compensation of employees at 151 and the goods and services at 225. The goods and services mainly, these are the projects that we implement in the department. So that brings the expenditure to 379. The next slide, which is slide number 49, the 1.4 billion is what then was transferred to the entities that constitute about 69% of the budget. And of course, the capital assets as well as software, bringing the total capital expenditure to 2.5 million. In terms of the overall expenditure, we then have spent, out of a figure of 2 billion, we have spent 1.7 billion because the other part of the revenue is just mainly, like I did mention, that dividends that are transferred to the National Revenue Fund from Vodacom, Telkom, as well as license fee from ICASA. Next slide, which is 50, once again, just gives a summary of the revenue that we then have transferred to National Treasury. So in terms of what we then took to Treasury, was the under expense of 210 million, was the 2.3 billion from dividends, it was 8 million from the ICASA licenses, and finally we transferred 2.5 to National Treasury. I think the next slide, which is slide number 51, is the one that gives a global picture in terms of how the department has performed. With a final appropriation of 2 billion, with actual expenditure of 1.7 billion, turning the 210 to National Treasury, which I spoke of, and we closed at 89.5% in terms of the expenditure. And if honorable members and chair look at the table, you then see what was allocated to what program and what was then the actual expenditure. I think what is key and critical, honorable chair members, is that if you look at program number 4, all the transfers to the entities at 100% were effective. The under expenditure of 210 million, I think it's important to talk to that, to indicate that it's mainly unspent funds for the 112 call center as well as the broadband rollout. I think on the broadband rollout, one of the key and critical decisions that we had to look into as a department was to say, do we proceed and just spend money on broadband? Meanwhile, there is a policy review on broadband, which has just been finalized, as well as the strategy and the rollout plan. One other critical thing also around broadband is the fact that it's a project which is scattered almost all over the show. I mean, there's broadband infrastructure involved, there's Centec involved, there was USASA involved at some point, and many other players, for example, Telkom as well. And I think the view that we then took as a government was that it would not make sense to just proceed spending money, whereas we should be rather looking at integrating, and this is the approach that the minister has actually, or is actually spearheading, to make sure that when we start rolling out broadband, we are very sure. I mean, all the loose ends have been tied, all the players, they know exactly what they are doing. And I think also considering the fact that we have municipalities and provincial governments, so you need sort of like a very clear national direction as far as broadband is concerned. And of course, on the 112, the under expenditure there, it's a project that at some point it was stopped and it continued. I think we've been able to appoint a transaction advisor because it is a PPP project. And of course, with PPP projects, we have to get transaction advisor and go through all the processes. So it takes a bit of time, but we are at a stage where now we are finalizing the appointment of a service provider to assist. So those are the two projects where we excelled the other expenditure. I think, Honorable Chair, slide number 51 just gives an overall picture. And if I go to, if I can skip maybe slide number 52 because it's still mainly a repetition, go to slide number 53 and slide number 54. They then indicate
what was allocated to entities and what was finally transferred. Like I did mention earlier on that all transfers to the entities were effected accordingly. I think I'll pause here at this point, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Gigi, for the comprehensive presentation. But nonetheless, we do have questions. Honorable Mlenzana, Honorable Groenewald, Honorable Jacobs, and I'll call in that order.
Thank you, Jonathan. Thank you, DG and the team. One for honoring this meeting and also the presentation. Chairperson, I will deal with my questions. Let me start with a deadline. I will deeply focus, unfortunately, when I'm dealing with the presentation, with this area which you said is for information. But it drew my interest where you were looking at your key achievements. Your slide, Page 55. You are talking of delays which were experienced because of the HR capacity challenges, after which the project was transferred to an alternate branch. That is the comprehensive report developed on the strategic value of economic strength of the creative industry, including its potential of job creation. The reasons behind the failure. It's terrible, but just that. It's terrible. Delay, experience, HR capacity, challenge. What are the key? What are these challenges? I'm asking this so that you are able to ask. Slide 8. If you look at the document, it is page 40 on e-government services. There, you do not get the reason why. It is just saying this is something for the future, that the department will continue collaboration with TPSA on this initiative. But you are not told why has initiative not been achieved. If you go to slide 84, are we noting today? So, if now we go to slide 84, the same on your national RAAD Council institution, the establishment chair of the eSkills Council also, it's about challenges which are experienced. What are the challenges? Detail. You go to the next slide, slide 85. Even there, on the digital content, the digital content, once more there, you are talking of intensely. This chair becomes even worse. But then you are talking internal delays of the DG. What are these internal delays that are insurmountable? You are saying to us, you are unable.
what you are saying. Because it's problems from within, that's what you are saying to us. Chair, if now we go to the annual report, page 172. There is the legal case. And as at 31st March 2012, you had 400 million. What does it mean? Also on page 198, yes, of the annual report, there I have marked on the utilization of consultants. What one chair, remember we had a motion yesterday around this utilization of consultants. Of course, we're not referring to this particular document, but we were generic. We are generally concerned, Chair, as the National Council of Offices, with the use of consultants. Here we know that as bureaucrats, literally we say we don't need the use of consultants. We then have changed the name from consultant to service provider. That's what we know. Chair, row 4, the appointment of a service provider to render forensic investigation. Is that 1.9 billion? I'm not sure of number. 198. Number 14, utilization of consultants. So page 14.1. That's 1.9 million, eh? Yeah, 1.9 million, not billion. Yes, 2 million. Appointment of a service provider to end a forensic investigation. Chair, no one would be against the institution of forensic investigation. We would always encourage that. But, then, what are the roots, the outcome? Yes. Why was it necessary if you had adequate risk management processes within the government? Or, am I correct when I'm assuming, PJ, that you have adequate risk assessment processes, or maybe you don't? I'm assuming that because it once crossed my ear that you do have the risk management in the department. That's why you said last time. That's why I'm asking this question as the chair. Chair, on performance contracts. We have been hearing about this. I don't have to ask, did you let the same situation happen that happened in the portfolio committee? So I don't want to ask whether or not you signed the performance contract, but now I want to ask why a performance contract not signed. And who has not signed the government contract? Can we be provided the list of names? But who are those who would not sign the government contract? I know, Chair, a performance contract always go along with a performance bonus. Now, the following question would be, are there any of these people who received bonuses and increases while they did not sign the performance contract? If you can allow me the second bite. Sure.
Thank you, Chairperson. From my side, I've also got a couple of questions. The first one is about the vacant post in the department. If we are looking into it, we see that to fill a post, it took the department about 31.1 months. That means it's 2.5 years to fill a post. That is half of the time we are here in Parliament, and that is really not acceptable. On average, out of every 100 vacancies, there are 30 vacant positions at the stage in the department. And the senior management, in the senior management, and I think that is the most important part of the department, there is approximately 30% or 50 vacant positions at the stage. And that is nearby 40%. So I'm a bit worried about that if I'm looking into this figures I've had here in front of me. And what I want to know is, what are the department going to do to see that we can fill it quicker and have the right people in the right positions at the end of the day? Then, Chairperson, I also want to know, the department achieved only 69 of the 108 planned targets. So, and that is about 45% of the set of targets you achieve. So that is the information I've had here in front of me. So if you can react on that, I will. Not a single entity, including the department, has achieved more than 75% of its planned targets. 75%. And then I can mention it to you. USASA, 9% targets achieved, and 91% not achieved. And so I can carry on. SABC, of a total of 66 planned objectives, only 20% were achieved. So I want to know, why has this situation in all entities has been allowed to happen? Why have the entities regressed according to the AG? Okay, and then the other question I also have is regarding the previous member also already asked it, is about the claims of 380 million rand, and all you mentioned there is possible the claims. Possible legal claims, that is what is in the report, and I also want to know, what is that possible legal claims? Thank you.
Yeah, maybe need to request the department when they answer our questions, they answer them to our satisfaction. They should not just scrap the surface. I don't want to call that happened yesterday. When we ask people, just scratch the surface, let's go deeper to what we were asking. I'll start with my province first, on the slide 13. Flagship program is coming in impact. I don't see the Free State. Maybe we are unfortunate as the Free State. I don't know what happened, so maybe if we could get an answer to that. And the second one is selections of schools. You said you do it in collaboration with the Department of Basic Education. Can we get the details? Which are those schools, in which provinces are those schools which have been selected, as well as into health, connectivity to health centers and schools. All from the issue of rural connectivity, in which provinces, and also in which areas. There is also this issue of the challenge by ETV, which is a stumbling block to to what's your progress. Can you get the details of that, what it's all about? There is also this issue of legacy, fever legacy. I'm not so sure because you, legacy projects, you talked about schools as part of, is that about all? And what was the funding? Because there is also a surplus which came from Telkom. So up to so far, what is the progress about the details of the funding? Does the department finally have a service delivery plan? Can we get that? Yes. I think the last one will be is the rural development fund that we issued last year. How much was it? From who got the tender? What interest has that person had in DLC before? What is the progress impact really on that? I'll come to the second.
Thank you, DG. Page 196 of the annual report. With regard to suspension of employees, why are they suspended for so long? Average number, I think it's 2,778. And what is being done to remedy this situation? And why is it costing so much? Why is it costing so much as there are only two people involved? Why have they been suspended and who are they? Then the other one that I have for you is with regard to digital terrestrial television infrastructure rollout. 80% population coverage was to be achieved, but only 60% was achieved. In addition, this is really misleading, as the geographical rollout in certain provinces is dismal. KZN 20%, Western Cape 12%, Eastern Cape 11%, and Northern Cape 3%. Why is the rollout in this province so bad? And what is being done to remedy the situation? The other one, your turnaround strategy refers to leadership development as an intervention. You conducted leadership development work program in 2006 that was conducted. Maybe it was before you were there, but we've got the... what were the outcome and were the results implemented of this development program? Why would you really want to develop leadership when people are still to be placed in the new structure? And how did you identify the skills gaps? Then the other one, DG, when did you hold IDR forum to consult provinces in terms of the IDR Act? If you can give us all the list of projects you are doing in provinces, as I make sure that we represent provinces. So if we can have the list of projects, where and where they are, and how many jobs or skills have been generated in each province. Also, there is this ESA agency in Rabo. Who closed it? Who gave the mandate?
when we need the software for government services and products. The other one is what happened to ICT infrastructure. That will be brought to communities, telecenters, cyber labs, and judges imposed in post offices. Who is monitoring them in the DOC? And what is their current state? If we can hear, what is their current state? And what is real, if you can maybe explain to us, because some of the things we read in papers, what is really happening in the post office sector? The situation in the post office with the information of systems and even if you can tell us, do you still have the board? What is happening for the board? And also now, recently we saw on the news that Telkom has resigned. Tell us if these issues were in your annual report, because we must know on these SOEs what is happening. You are sitting with people and you see on TV, we must get that information so that we are able to also explain to the people what is happening in Telco. This is the information that the committee must get. The first-hand information, what is happening in the SOEs that the department is responsible for. The last one, what happened to the E-rate policy of DOC, E-rate, yes, to assist connectivity to schools, and what has been the progress. We'll come back, if you can just, we'll come back. Let me welcome Honorable Sibande. And this one also, the stakeholder relations. Stakeholder relations survey. Plan and implementation strategy to reach out to industry and other government departments. Where is the barometer to measure how well we are engaging the sector? Parliament, SOEs, and the public. I think you can respond to those, DG, then we will come back.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I will take some of the questions, but we would collectively respond. Maybe let me just deal with the issue of the turnaround leadership that was implemented in 2006. Of course, Honorable Chairperson, at that time I was not very close to the issues. I think I had just joined the department, but I'll be able to respond. That leadership process was successfully conducted, and I know that I was one of the people who went through I think it was an executive course with the University of Pretoria, so most of us did that. But also to know that, Honorable Chairperson, what you normally have in an organization is that you've got people that join here after a few years, they leave, and then you've got new people. So leadership development is something that you need to do on a continuous basis now. This is why we are going through that process, because maybe I'll just make a traffic example. At the time we're doing that leadership conference, training, maybe someone like Sam was not even in the department, if I'm correct, sir. Quite a few people who are here already were not even in the department, so hence why they need to continuously do that. But also even the ones that were there, leadership is something that you need to continuously be refreshing and going back to it. Because so that you keep up to best with what's happening. The second issue that I want to address is that the issue of ISA, I think it was taken, maybe Tim was able to assist me in terms of the decision that was taken by ISA in terms of which year. But the decision that we've taken, Honorable Chairperson, is that to avoid a scenario where, which is similar to what is happening with Sokpendi, where you find that as a state, you've got activities all over with regard to e-skills. We took a decision with the minister to consolidate our e-skills initiatives, which is the integration of e-skills, the MISA and the ISA. We should then form an institute, which that institute would have some form of curriculum for the e-skills development. That process is still underway, but the ultimate goal is that we would want to integrate the ISA element, the e-skills element, and the MISA, so that we don't have things all over. We have just one institution that we know consolidate, and that institution on a I don't know how regular, but you would look at its mandate on a certain point in time as the need changes in terms of the requirement of the country. Now, on the HR capacity, one of the things that we did when we were finalizing the strategic plan, because we're in the process of finalizing or reviewing the organizational structure, is that we had planned to appoint certain key people in certain key vacancies in the department, and unfortunately the process of the organizational structure it took longer than what we anticipated in terms of finalizing it internally, but also ensuring that we get concurrent with the Department of Public and Service Administration. One of the things that we want to highlight, as much as one may want to ensure that you address these things agently, but the challenge is always that you need to ensure that you do compliance, because if you appoint a position that on a structure that has not been approved, those positions become irregular. So hence why the need to ensure that we first finalize our consultation with DPA, and I think some will be able to assist me in addressing some of the challenges why it took us longer than we had planned. But the next issue that I also wanted to address is with regard to the 2010 FIFA legacy. We only reported on the part that we're doing with the legacy, but also to note that the legacy report that maybe, I don't know whether we had reported it previously in this committee, it was about the infrastructure rollout of the STEMTEC, which is the second teleport, but also the infrastructure rollout of Telkom, which also left a legacy for the country. But our reporting now, it was about what are we doing for this current period that we're reporting to for the 2011-2012, noting that the project was completed in 2010, and some of the things were reported in the 2010-2011. Farah, can you just deal with the issue of the targets?
Thanks, Teacher. Honourable Chair and honourable members, I think it was Honourable Kronobal that referred to the 69 out of 108 targets. So I think a straightforward response to that will be if you refer to the annual report on page 101. If I'm actually referring to the Auditor General's report, so at the bottom of page 101, achievement of planned targets, the Auditor General confirms here that a total number of planned targets, that only 69 targets were achieved, that 69 out of the 99 targets, which gives you a 70%, as a result, 70% of the total planned targets were achieved.
Honorable Chair, honorable members, I will deal with it.
Okay. Honorable Lenza. Chair, what's your respect? The question is based on this. Why this particular achievement? Not that one does not understand. The question is aroused by this report. That's it.
Thank you. I'm asking the question, why has this situation in all the entities been allowed to happen? That is what I want to know. The 70% is fine. It's bad. There's 30% we do not achieve. And then my question was, why? And why have the entities regressed according to the 18?
And I think it's Honorable Lendano who said, you must be open to ask. Give us the correct
responses. We are here to assist. We are really here to assist. If you don't give us the correct, we're not going to cut your heads off. But you must just give us the correct responses. We are the committees that do oversight. And if you just put polish or put cream, we won't be able to assist you.
Thank you, Chair. I actually go further and I mention the different entities. I said Usasa 9% target, and 91% was not achieved. And so I can claim I've got a lot of the entities here with the percentage.
Well, just let me just clarify, the part of the entities is what DG Tigalas was going to respond. I think maybe the mistake that we could have made was not to clarify that he was just responding on the issue of just the department, but the entities, when DG Tigalas responds, he will deal with the issue of the entities. Yes, if we can just allow him to respond, yes. Yes, it's that the question is broken down in terms of into two people in terms of the response.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. If I could perhaps start with the issue around why are the entities regressing, I think I must state upfront that it is indeed correct that there is a challenge within the entities, and some of these issues have been picked up through the oversight unit, which is in the department, which is currently being strengthened, to make sure that the entities are monitored closely. Now, if I could just maybe zoom into specific examples. If the Honorable Members look at an entity like USASA, which only managed to achieve 9 targets, it looks a little bit awkward, but I think the reality is that the Honorable Members may recall that USASA is one of the entities that had problems with regard to money leaving the entities without any service delivery. And as a result, the board had to be offloaded the portfolio committee made a recommendation that the board needed to be relieved of its duties, which indeed then the minister acted on that. We almost had a situation where almost everyone was on suspension, from the CEO to the CFO to everybody else. And at that time also there were no board. And what then the minister did, she then appointed executive caretakers, myself and the DDG Pierre from the department to go and assist. Now the difficulty that we had when we were, arrived at the agency was an issue of firstly trying to block, because the money was leaving the entity at almost a very, very high rate. And one of the critical things was to say, instead of just saying business as usual, let's block the holes and make sure that systems are put in place so that we don't have a repetition of the funds moving. And of course, then there was a forensic investigation which was instituted and so on. And of course, the new board now is busy applying its mind on the outcomes of the forensic investigation so that the outcomes of that process could be implemented. So within that period, it became almost very difficult to even implement projects because you're dealing with people who are more or less used to flouting process, and therefore you didn't want to then run into a similar situation. Therefore, it's just a bit unfortunate because that kind of a situation had a negative impact on the service delivery, which we do acknowledge that indeed most of the projects could not move, but it was a step that was necessary that it be put in place to ensure that we are able to safeguard the resources of the taxpayers. If I move to the other entities, the Honorable Members would recall that when the Minister came into office, we almost have entities that were headless. It's either you didn't have a CEO there, a CFO there, a COO there. So it was basically a situation whereby the leadership, there was a serious leadership vacuum at the top. And therefore, when you have a situation like that, it becomes difficult to execute projects because people at the lower level, they have a tendency to want to do as they please and forget about the fact that they have to work. And one of the things that the minister prioritized in her first statement was that she needed to bring about stability in the entity. And I'm sure the Honorable Members would have noticed, starting with the SABC, which did not have a CEO, which now has a CFO, Also, then it got a CFO who unfortunately was also suspended recently. Going to SAPO, which also had its own challenges, you almost had 1% who was playing CEO, CFO, COO, which is a situation that the minister was uncomfortable with, and as a result, she let processes in place to make sure that the stability of SAPO. For example, SAPO now has a CEO, there is a CFO, even though not on a full-time basis, because it is a capacity that has been borrowed from South African Revenue Services. The process of appointing a COO is currently underway. Now, if you look at the rest of the other entities, you almost have a similar situation where it's either you wouldn't have a CFO or key and critical people who are instrumental in making sure that the projects are delivered. So as a result of that, we have also, in fact, Minister, one other thing that I need to mention, honorable members, is that not only at the executive level, even at the board level, there was also a problem wherein, for example, some of the boards were not fully constituted. The minister then came on board, appointed a few board members at SAPO, at SASA, Senke was also appointed, and so on. So there is that kind of stability, and that is one of the critical issues that the AG raised, to say, if there is no stability at the leadership level, it becomes almost difficult to get projects going. So by and large, that is really what created this unfortunate situation of entities failing to achieve targets, because it was almost like, yes, we do acknowledge, honorable members, that there were people there, but when there is no clear direction as to where the organization is going, it almost becomes a little bit difficult to go about achieving projects and targets. If I could just quickly, Honorable Chair, go to the other questions that were raised by Honorable Members. I think Honorable Nelson did raise an issue around legal claims. I must indicate that these are the some of the possible matters where it could be service providers are having a claim against the department. So these matters are in court. So in as far as we do our financials, we are then required to disclose what perfectly could be claimed from us. Not to say that it will be claimed, it depends on court processes. If I could just single out one big amount of the 400 million, it's the 375. It's an amount which is a dispute between Public Investment Corporation as well as the South African Broadcasting Corporation, the SABC and the PIC. There has been this amount has been dragging on for quite some time without the SABC taking ownership and the PIC insisting that they want their money. It relates to the transition prior 94. So as a result, if whatever the outcome, the department may be held liable because of by virtue of us playing an oversight role over the SABC. But it is a matter that it is now heading to court, and depending on the outcomes of the court processes, we can then be directed whether we have to pay or not. So it's just to indicate that there could be a possibility that there could be a claim on the department. I think on the utilization of consultants, I think Honorable Melanson did raise an issue around the forensic investigation, which came at a cost of 109 million, that is on page number 198. This project came about due to the qualification that the department received in the financial year 2009-2010, which was based on the regular expenditures that were detected by the Auditor General. And as a result, we then took a view to say, because the Auditor General actually brought about these things that occurred from 2006, between 2006 and 2009. It was then important to go to the bottom of the issue to find out exactly what happened, who did not do what they were supposed to do, and who should be held accountable, and so on. And what this forensic investigation then did, it brought to the surface the fact that between 2006 and 2009, there was a process, or in fact procurement processes were flouted by appointing travel agencies without following the procurement procedures, and therefore needed to find out from the forensic investigators what action could be taken, who should be held responsible, and things like those. And what then the report brought about was that it was to look at whether all the transactions were legitimate, whether the department received the travel and accommodation services from the service providers who were implicated. It was two service providers. And the reports did confirm that all the receipts and all the documentation that was put forward proved that the department did receive a benefit, and the next question that we then asked was to say, who do we hold accountable? Unfortunately, they then recommended to us that in view that the benefit was received, and of course the transactions were committed at the time when most people in fact who were there have left the organization and so on, we then wanted to check whether we could be able to pursue. And the main question at hand was to say, what would then be the basis? Because if we pursue, it means that the matter goes to court. And when we go to court, are we going to be able to argue our case successfully? Because while the report says the benefit has been received, the question might then be, why do you want to recover, and what is the basis for the recovery? So it was a very intense process which involved the accountants, involved lawyers, and so on, so that when you then take a step forward, you are sure of whether you'll be able to win, and then therefore they then indicated to us that it may not necessarily be possible. We could pursue, but the outcome will almost be zero going forward. So that's really what happened. But I must indicate that this forensic process then helped us to clean up books of the department, because it uncovered about 95 million of irregular expenditure. In relation to those transactions. It assisted us to make sure that we are able to clean up, we are able to put systems and processes in place going forward, so that we do not have a repetition of a similar situation. Yeah, I think I will then go to the issue that has been raised by the Honourable Chairperson, why are people on suspensions? I must indicate that the two people that Honourable Chairperson has asked about are the very same individual. It was Chief Director for Finance and Deputy Director General for Governance and Administration who were suspended and also finally they had to be released from the department in relation to the very same discovery of some of the irregularities that were committed in the past. So they left. They unfortunately, the reason why their cases took so long is because ordinarily, and I'm sure honourable members would also appreciate the fact that ordinarily when people are on suspension, there's a tendency to play hide and seek. You know, when the matter is supposed to sit, then they bring lawyers and they say this document is missing, that document, and then when that document comes, then something else emerges. So it's more like a tactic of buying time. So unfortunately, it becomes a very difficult process because all these things are regulated and the department finds itself having to drag all these disciplinary matters. And this is something that happens almost throughout, because employees always have a way of trying to buy time. So finally, they had to be released from the department because there were some of the people who were suspended for some of the wrongdoings. Yeah, I think I'll pause here, Honourable Chair.
Honourable Chair and Honourable Minister, there's a few questions which have come, which I'm just going to give account on exactly what the situation is, Honourable Chair.
Can I let Honourable Zibanda raise his question so that when you respond, because I don't think we're going to have a second fight because of time.
But we will raise the question and we will go the question from one.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think you received my apologies, but I wanted to make a follow-up on what she was raising. You see, I think he was responding on page 103 in terms of the investigation by the Auditor General. Because you know what was worrying me is that I can read it through, if you don't mind. They said forensic investigation was instituted by the department to investigate the irregular expenditure reported in the auditor's report. In the 09-10 financial year, they concluded that the report of Auditor Emerald was factually correct and they identified additional irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, not disclosed. Here it says not disclosed, but I'm sorry for correction, the DG spoke about 95 million. You said it's about 95 million. This one. Okay, fine. Let's go back to page 99. On page 99, again, on other investigation, 99. Again, in terms of the investigation, you see, here, they are saying the matter, it was out of court segment. I don't think the fund is concerning, because the first one of 99.95 million, I can agree it's for response is basically on one only. But on 99, you see, Mama, I was so impressed when I was coming out, you were saying that they must help us in order to help them. Next year, we're going for budget so that you can be able to defend it. That, therefore, here, they said, they spoke about an out-of-court segment. How much was involved? How much was involved? You know, help us, because here they are saying the investigation will carry out into alleged financial misconduct by Chief Operations Officer and Chief Director of Finance. Other people are getting, you know, they are getting away with the matter because they do want to clean this department. They are able to apply for another department so that we can be able to know exactly what type of animal we're dealing about. So how much was involved here? Because already we responded with the other one. Thank you. Thank you, ma'am.
Okay.
Honorable Chair, thank you. The first matter raised by Honorable Lenzane on the e-government services for the supporters. Honorable Chair, I must indicate that e-government projects are in the domain of the Department of Public Service and Administration. The policy mandate on e-government is with that department. They also have an implementing institution, which is GTOP, as well as CETA. Now, Honorable Chair, when we conceived this project and found it to be important, it unfortunately happened that the DPSA took a decision to review their e-government policy framework, which was developed in 2001. It was so old that it didn't yield you know, the automation of e-government services. And this was to be the implementation of a particular framework. The decision by the department was that DOC may not necessarily continue because they are reviewing that policy to a stage where after that is finalized, then we can be able to implement. And that led to the situation where we found ourselves. And we continue to support their policy review processes. The next matter was the International Advisory Panel of Experts. There was a delay here because of the particular approach that was proposed. In the terms of reference which we submitted to the then late minister, may soul rest in peace, he actually had a different approach on how we should approach this issue of international advisory. You recall that over the years the department has always had what was called the Presidential International Advisory Council, PIAC. And the issue was to change that structure and the model, which previously involved the president as the chair of that particular structure and the several ministers sitting. Now, just shortly after the 2009 elections, you would recall that certain government clusters were also changed, and this also touched on the fact that the structure which was subsequent or worked together with this, which was such called the ICED cluster, was therefore not continued with this. So in this particular one, Chairperson,
So in essence, what the minister currently doing now is to, I'm talking about the current situation. So what's happening is that the International Advisory Council will be
Yeah, Mr. Lila Sedana, who's a Latin Pumalan.
The one I'm saying is Lang, Sedana, Cool.
So the international advisory panel that we're establishing is based on broadband in this form of the benchmarks that the department has currently done. So if you look at that, according to what the DG has said, is that the panel will support government on benchmarks for implementing broadband. The other concern related to the digital content for the NDR portal. Here, there was a situation here. This project was initiated around 2006. The contract ran period. We evaluated the benefits, Honorable Nelan, on this project. We found two things. One is that although we had invested funding for the training of young people, because the project targets young people, we did not find that all of them had interest to continue in the area of content development. When we concluded the project in KZN in 2009, we found that the people who were graduating, the numbers is even much smaller. But those who tend to participate were from rural provinces by and large. In the review of the MOU, we also wanted to see if SMMEs would benefit. Now this meant that the project had to be transferred fully to NEMISA as the implementing arm. This was part of the instruction to ensure alignment between department mandate and those of entities. So in the discussions on the implementation of this MOU, we encountered that those delays that we could not even transfer the money to NEMISA with respect to this particular project. So, Honorable Chairperson, the project, as we speak currently, is proceeding well. A model on how, because this is small scale, in fact, you are talking about a way in which a SME or individual can put out a story, it is quality assured, and then that person is actually given whatever stipend so that they can continue their work. It's part and parcel of digitizing content heritage. So it's in line with what we did in KZN around the digitization of Chief Albert Luthuli's content in Kabamfutsanyana, district municipality profiling, the life of Thabo Mufutsanyana there, and many other places where we have done this. So it's implemented actually at a small scale. Just want to proceed to see what else was highlighted. There's the issue around rural development, which was raised here. And I think by Honorable Jacobs, I must say that first, rural connectivity is implemented in line with the key outcome on rural development. We have developed a strategy, as the Director General has said. We went into an exercise to align with the Department of Rural Development on the site which we could prioritize. We prioritized 61 sites for that to determine the extent of ICT services in those rural nodes, as they are called. The issue raised about a particular interest of an individual, the company here which got the tender is called Linkages Development. I myself, as sitting here, I am not aware of any underhanding interest lying in this particular project, and I also do not sit in the tender committees that deal with these issues. The tender process which we undertook was open tender, so we could not even say that we took this company through a practice note. It could be that if the matter is audited by the finance division headed by DDG Vilakazi here, if he picks up certain things, he will raise them in terms of the treasury regulations, which requires particular action, but from my desk, I do not have a specific knowledge of a particular interest in this case. The project is proceeding well. All the ports have been received from this linkages
people. What remains, Chairperson, is to look at the business development cases that are involved in this 61 rural sites. The project is recorded in the rural development cluster of the economic cluster, which oversees this. We are looking at implementation where in the Universal Service and Access Agency, SAPO, and possibly if there are no radio or TV services, SABC and the CASA Centric, look into getting involved in those rural nodes because they are identified as
where are these projects?
They are throughout the country, Honorable Chairperson. They are throughout the country. They are in line with the rural development comprehensive rural development program of the Department of Rural Development and Land Affairs.
Chair, he has not said anything. He said they are throughout the country. He says they are throughout the country. Where? Specifically. Because I asked that it should be specific.
I have the information. We request you to actually send this information to us where they are, so that we will go to this project. We will, during our oversight week, when we sit with you here, we get information and we go there for ourselves to go and see. So if you don't have information, just pass. Tell us that I don't have this information, but we will send you information. It must be within 14 days.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. The information on where is in the department, and we'll make it available within the specified period. These are district municipalities. Most of them are actually rural, Chairperson. But we'll make the information available to the committee. The IGR forum, Honorable Chairperson, met in 2011, here in the Western Cape. That's where the last meeting of the IGRF was held. The technical committee of the IGRF was also held this year. There are plans following minister's visits to provinces. Minister has visited the Free State province where discussions were held. Free State has agreed to actually host the next IGRF. Minister has also visited the province of Mpumalanga, and there are plans to visit other provinces, Northwest and Gauteng and KZN in the next future. So that is the response on the IGRF, DJ, I hope I have covered most of this. Thank you very much. The eSkills Council, I apologize, I forgot that. The eSkills Council, Honorable Chairperson, is a structure which was meant to help the department come up with the eSkills framework. Now, in the investigation of this eSkills framework, we looked at countries like UK, and Australia. The eSkills Institute headed by Dr. Veso is behaving that way specifically on the implementation of that. There was a decision, Chairperson, to align the work of the eSkills Council with that of the HRD Council headed by the Deputy President. And as it is now, this structure is actually reporting through that, as the implementation of the content work involved in there is actually done through Dr. Veso's unit, which is the eSkills Institute. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable, I just wanted to emphasize what D.D. Villera has raised about the highest legal cost that Honourable Member Lenzana raised. Just to give the context and the background, if you remember very well, in Northwest, there were the Bob Studios, who put us on a from the federal government, you know, that were left there. So the issue between SABC, DOC, and the PID is related to that case, because the students are still there. They need to be serviced, and the deal is not finalized, and that's why there's this legal serious debate that takes a lot of time of the money on it. So, and if you count from 1994 till now, it's almost 14 years or more. The issue being not resolved. So it costs a lot, they sue, and that's where the chunk of the money goes.
But is there a way?
Honorable Chair, the challenge with this is that we have engaged PLC to see if they couldn't write off the debt, because this talks to the legacy issues. And they have put their foot down to say the money does not belong to PLC, but it belongs to government employee pension scheme. Therefore, they are going to court. We have tried to get the two ministers to also deal with the matter, but JC, I think the Minister of Finance is not really keen on getting to a settlement. So, unfortunately, it's a matter that is going to be decided by the courts, because all avenues have been explored, because they want the SABC to pay this amount. And the difficulty that we're having, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, is that if you take 375 million plus interest from just before 94, it's going to really, really dig a big hole on the SABC finances. That's the difficulty that we have. But we're hoping that the courts would maybe be able to give a direction on the matter, because I think the view from the minister was that if the matter could be settled amicably, that would help, but it seems the other parties are not willing to negotiate.
Thank you very much, honorable members. I will attempt to address a number of issues that were raised. I am addressing, Chair. The issues that were raised by the honorable members, one was with regards to E-rate, school connectivity, this festival legacy project, and the schools where this connectivity is happening, and then the issue of the DTT 80% to 60%. With regards to the E-rate, the policy is very much in place. It is being implemented. However, its implementation is a little bit cumbersome, both for those that want to access E-rate and for the entity that provides E-rate. What I mean by this is that as far as telecom is concerned, clients are either business or home. So it does not begin to classify the E-rate customer. So as we are implementing E-rate, it's very difficult to say these are the E-rate customers. That's one. But on the other side, for the E-rate, the school, it is difficult for them to access this, because they know a straightforward methodology to say this is how you go about accessing E-rate from a telecom perspective. So I think it's an area that we need to look at going into the future. But again, it is very effective, and obviously who have benefited thus far are those schools that are connected and that have the resources. The types of schools that we are trying to connect have obviously has not benefited from the E-rate. With regards to the school connectivity project itself, we are intending to connect a total of 27,000 schools. However, the first phase of the project is to connect 1,650 schools. And that number is informed or is based on the money that are flowing from the FIFA 2010 legacy. So we're using that as part of our FIFA 2010 legacy. And to that end, we have commenced connecting the schools. To date, you're looking at probably 600 plus schools that have been connected to this network. I must confess that in doing so, the schools were identified by the Department of Education. But again, as we are implementing a project, we come to certain areas where the schools say, look, yeah, they already have connections, so they don't need to be part of this project. In terms of the schools to where they are, we have a very detailed plan as to where the schools are, the names, etc. But for the sake of this meeting here, I can just tell you at a high level in terms of provinces how many schools will be connected. In the Eastern Cape, you're looking at 95 schools, Free State, 65, Gauteng, 126, KZN, 85, Limpopo, 29, Mpumalanga, 105, Northern Cape 27, Northwest 37, Western Cape 80. So that is a breakdown per province, but we can give you the final details as to which schools.
Yeah, I wanted to say we want the final details. We want which schools, and maybe, per province.
No, we can provide
because these schools are in our constituency, so that we are part and parcel of that. Don't do like you did in my constituency, you went to Shabalala, Kashabalala, and you didn't inform me, even not as a member of the constituency, but as the member of this committee. We said when you were here, we said we want to have information on every program that you are doing in provinces, that we as members of these committees, we accompany you if possible, or if not possible, maybe one member of the committee can go. If members doesn't go, so that people can, we can tell people what you do, even in the chamber, we do stand up and make motions. But you every time you do this, you tend to ignore this, and you don't even like let the minister know that you didn't tell us. Definitely, Didi, don't make your face like that, because when you were there, called the minister to say why are you? You didn't tell. She didn't know that you didn't inform us.
Thank you. We'll definitely provide that information, and we apologize for that. So basically that is what we're going to be doing during the course of this year to connect 1,650 schools. And that information will be provided. With regard to DTT, why from 80 to 60, my understanding is that Centec changed its approach in the rollout of DTT infrastructure. And as such, it was looking for quick win solutions and focus on heavily populated areas. So you'll find that a 60% coverage here constitutes a higher percentage of population. So in terms of number of people were covered. So it was a change in approach that made forced these numbers to be changed.
Thank you, DT.
Honorable Chairperson, one of the things that maybe Buchaku did not mention is that the initial planning for DTT was geographic, but at one of the meetings that we had with Centec, that's just where the intervention was done by the minister to say we cannot continuously be focusing on the urban and only dealing with the rural areas at the last end. Hence why Centec had to change the replanning. And if I'm correct, the order is now in Pop-Pop-Ten as number one, then Mpumalanga, I don't remember which province, but the replanning was changed by Centec to say we need to treat rural areas and urban equally and redo the planning in that context.
I think this committee is the one that raised that. I think there was also, if I'm not mistaken, Honorable Subandi said, why always you start in urban areas? This committee was this committee, the concern of this committee to say why do you always start in urban areas and not rural areas? So it was us.
The next issue, I'll just deal with two more questions, is with regard to the Free State. There are engagements with the University of Free State, and there is a draft MOU that has been given to the Office of the Vice Chancellor, and once we can conclude on the MOU, we will be doing something with the University of the Free State. The next issue that Honorable Chairperson raised about the post office is that Ada just said there was a fraudulent activity within the post office, which was also reported in the media. We formed part of the team that focused on the matter just to understand what were the issues.
and the post office actually appointed forensic investigators to the very on board. And upon the outcome of the forensic investigators, the South African police were also involved, and there were criminal charges laid against some of the people who were also a post office employees. So there was a process underway. Now the second issue on the resignation of the Telkom CEO, which is unfortunate, also to note that Telkom has been going through a very difficult time in terms of as a company, but not in the making of maybe the CEO or the people that are there, but also noting that it's because of the nature of the competition of this ICT sector, where you know Telkom is facing very heavy competition from its rivals like your Vodacom and your MTN, and also the fact that it launched a mobile which had been struggling. So there's been a number of things happening to Telkom. But from our side, with the minister, there has been a concerted effort to see how we can support it, not only as a major shareholder, but also because of Telkom is a South African company. It plays a very critical role with regard to ICT infrastructure development for the country. So as a result, there has been interactions with the minister and cabinet in terms of how, as a South African government, we can support this critical asset for the country. So it's unfortunate some of these things that have happened, but there is, from our side, a concerted effort to support the company, to support it so that it can be successful, not only because of we are shareholder, but also in the interest of the country, because of the role that Telkom plays for ICT infrastructure development.
There was just an issue raised about monitoring the rollout of infrastructure, which came from yourself, school labs, and then the PITs as well, and telecenters. The telecenters are rolled out by ISASA. ISASA has given a target of 400 to roll out by 2015. PITs are done by SAPO. And the telecenters are done by both the department, the cyber apps are done by both the department and USASA as well. The DG has established a SOE committee wherein these entities come to report what it is that they are doing on a regular basis, which is coordinated by the department. So this is where we know and we use that structure as a reporting mechanism and a measure of where the progress is and where challenges are, and so that we could report to the minister for intervention. Thank you very much.
Okay. Let me say we have come to the end of... Okay. Would Honorable Swanda want to say something? Yeah. I want to say, Honorable Members, what I was going to say, a fair fairly, but course. So that they can respond to that when they said that 14 days. So we don't want to get a response now. Let us just give them, that one of yours they will, Honorable Siban. But Honorable Jacobs, is there something new?
No, just a comment.
Okay, all right, you'll comment. Or they must respond to the one of Honorable Siban. And mine is, if you can tell us about the youth and ICT with children and ICT, women and ICT. If you can just don't tell us now, because we want to get full information on your intervention as the Department of Communications. But can you respond, and then we'll get the comment from Honorable Jacobs.
Oh.
Performance contracts and bonuses. Those questions were not responded to. Yeah. You know, if you don't have answers, you must tell us. Because, you know, DG, let me tell you. Distance, we see distance. And if you can help us, like, when something happens, communicate with the committee so that we have information. It's not right seeing information on the paper, reading on the paper.
Okay, can you respond to the 99-103 and then we'll get, and then for the Honorable Minister's question.
If you don't have the responses, please say it.
Say you don't have the responses so that we close the meeting.
Honorable Chair, I think the issue raised by Honorable Sibanda on the out-of-court settlement, it is indeed correct that the two officials were suspended. The department had to reach a settlement with them. It was a very painful process because it dragged for almost 2 years. And like I did indicate that one of the tricks that employees use in processes like this is to buy time, and in the process then you incur a lot of legal costs. So what we then had to do was to look at the cost implications if we proceed full steam with the matter versus if we release the employees. And based on the cost-benefit analysis, the conclusion was that it's better to release the employees because the department was just going to keep on pumping taxpayers' monies on lawyers based on employees who keep on shifting the goalposts. It's something that it's a very tricky decision to arrive at because we do acknowledge the concerns of the committee that somebody says it's found wrong and at the same time they walk away. The reality is that in those processes you have not even reached the stage where one says it's still at the stage of allegations until that time that somebody says indeed the wrongdoing has been committed. So we also consulted the Office of the State Attorney and were advised that it may be in the best interest of the department to save money on legal fees to let the employees go. I think Honorable Mlenzana and I did raise the government's agreement. Indeed, it is correct that not all the employees during the year under review signed the government's agreement. And the decision that has now been taken by the leadership of the department is that those who are refusing, because others were just simply refusing, disciplinary steps will have to be instituted against them. So that is the status as far as that matter is concerned, Honorable Chair.
Honourable members, I just want to clarify the issue of the settlement that Sam was raised. The challenge is that when you've got an employee under suspension, you can't put anyone in that position. So you are literally bound for that period. So you find that you're trying to conclude the matter, you can't avoid, no one can act in that position because when someone acts, they must be paid an acting salary, and you only pay an acting salary against a vacant post. So it becomes really cumbersome when you have to go through the process and it's one of those people processes that you really don't want to go through.
DG, I am not satisfied. You have not answered my question on performance bonus. Can you please then deal with my question in detail and forward it to the secretary? We want the names of the employees who got that, who did not sign.
Did she?
You see, my question was straightforward. That how much was utilized in out-of-court settlement. I didn't ask about the process, for how long did it take. So I will request also to that I even commented about the issue that we're going to full budget next day. Help us in order to help you. But go on.
Thanks. I just want to make my observation from the responses that we got from the department. It seems as if we're dealing with a department which is in crisis. Because in entities, targets are not met, lot of looting, off-state resources, people are charged, low-cost recovery, and so on. I think if we had enough time, we would have to call them back.
Yeah.
Because we need to go deeper in what is happening in this department. I'm not happy. From what I have, the resources that I've received is a department in crisis.
You heard, Diki. We're going to call you. Let's go and look at this. We don't want this big document glossy. We want you to tell us when we ask you questions, we want you to respond in a manner
Yes, definitely. We will understand that you are people at work. Like I said, when we started our strategic planning for the committee, we called you. And what we called you for, definitely, what we are asking, it was from the department side to say you're going to do 1, 2, 3. And now when you come, when you respond, it's like you're not really quite sure of what is really happening. So for today, the meeting, we want to thank you for coming and go and prepare yourself. We will call you. Thank you so much, members. The meeting stands adjourned. We will deal with other issues next week. Thanks.